The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend John Couch. John's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, November the 1st, 2019. All Saints Day. Tomorrow's All Souls Day. We are live Monday through Friday right here and have been with the Buckmaster Radio Show since the first week of January in 2011. We're on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. I am so glad that I don't live in Delhi, India, also known as New Delhi, India. They chalked up today the worst air quality ever recorded, so bad that the government said it's like living in a gas chamber. I just cannot. I've been to India, been to what used to be called Bombay, and I think I must have been there on what I was told was a good day, and the visibility was like you could barely see your hand in front of your face. Anyway, we can be happy we're here in Southern Arizona. Our media partners, big shout out. You heard him briefly, Dylan Smith. Hey, Dylan.
Hey, thanks for having me on again. You let me back through the door.
I did. TucsonSentinel.com. And later on, we'll hear about TucsonSentinel.com relies on its subscribers, right?
Community support. That's what it's all about. Because we're a nonprofit, independent news organization.
And you have, I want to say mix and match, but that's not right. You have a match.
A year-end matching grant campaign called Newsmatch, appropriately enough, mm-hmm. Which is for nonprofit news organizations all over the country. And there's a group of foundations that are matching donations from individuals to TucsonSentinel.com up to $1,000 from every person. So if you give us $5, they'll give us another $5. If you give us $50, they'll give us another $50. If you give us a generous $1,000 donation, they'll give us an extra $1,000 to make sure that there are reporters digging in and telling the untold stories. And yeah, that's really what we've been running on for the past decade, is the very generous contributions from people here in Tucson.
All right. Dylan, thank you for your support over the years. Green Valley News, Saharita Sun supports us. Thanks to Dan Scheer and his team, Jim Ninsel and his group over at Tucson Local Media Watch. Jim's the executive editor at The Weekly, but they have a portfolio that includes Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover is with us. Hi, Reverend Hoover. Always a pleasure.
Hi, Bill. Great to have you.
Reverend Hoover has created, birthed, if you will, several nonprofit organizations, most notably Humane Borders Incorporated, a social welfare organization dedicated to reducing migrant deaths. His latest project uses satellite-based technology, rescue beacons, to rescue immigrants stranded in the desert. Reverend Hoover is the recipient of the National Human Rights Award in Mexico, and this is a really big deal because he is the only non-Mexican to have received this very prestigious award. So, Reverend Hoover, you've been in this business over 30 years.
Yeah, it'll be 34 in January.
34 years in the business. We just saw the year-end numbers came out. There was a news conference in El Paso. Mark Morgan, who's the acting commissioner for the Trump administration in the customs area, said that the crisis is not over at the border, even though we've had, the numbers have kind of been all over the block. But when we say crisis, 34 years ago, weren't we calling the situation on the border a crisis then?
The now retired Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, Doris Meisner, was using that language when I first met her in Brownsville in the 80s, working with the huge Central American exodus. So we that term gets bandied about easily.
No refugees were resettled in the United States for the first time ever in October. Is that correct?
That's correct. And this has never happened. We've in previous decades, we have gone up to 150,000, 130,000 has been relatively normal, got down to 80 for a while. My concern that I'd like to express right now at this point is that the United States government doesn't resettle refugees. They pay community, faith-based groups, other nonprofits a little stipend to make these things happen, and then they use in-kind contributions, usually from parishioners, congregations.
Faith-based or
faith-based, right? Mostly of all kinds, spend about $1 billion a year in this industry, if you will. It's a tremendous amount of stuff, and so Uncle Sam doesn't spend very much. It's done by others, and by taking out that revenue stream, they are just, they're having to lay off the people that actually do the refugee resettlement, and we're destroying our capacity to do it again in the future.
Before I bring in Dylan Smith, and Joe Ferguson has also joined us, Joe from the Arizona Daily Star. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Thanks for bringing me in. Sorry I'm late.
All right. You have just returned from the border area, the northern Mexico. You told me before we went on the air, you've never seen a situation like you witnessed what's going on in northern Mexico right now. Share with our listeners. Give us the bottom line.
Well, I'm going to say north and south borders.
The southern border of Mexico.
Southern border of Mexico.
The northern border with the United States.
Yes.
And you've never seen what's going on.
We have large groups of people coming from Central America or through Central America. There are people from India, from Cameroon. A lot of people right now are transiting through Brazil.
Hmm.
From all kinds of places around the world. I visited a number of the Mexican government institutions that respond to their needs. COMAR is the Mexican National Commission for Attention to Refugees, and the line is sometimes 200-300 people deep, and they're processing them in minutes per person. So it's an enormous number of people. A lot of these people are trying to obtain a denial from the Mexican government.
They want a denial from the Mexican government. Why?
So that they would be able to apply for refugee status. They would have that piece of paper that says they're denied. That does not give them permission to transit Mexico. So then they're completely at the mercy of the cartels to get them across Mexico, or they do it on their own, but they don't have papers to go through certain checkpoints. And then they can apply because Stephen Miller et al. In the White House has said, we're not going to allow you to apply for asylum here unless you have been denied refugee status somewhere else in a third country.
And you're seeing a bunch of these people being flown back out to their country by the Mexican government.
Yes.
And you suspect, when I asked you before I went on the air, who's paying for this?
Uncle Sam. We were there when 260 people were flown back to India. Recently, 180 were flown back to Cameroon. We don't know the details.
That's not cheap.
That's not cheap.
Dylan Smith, join in here.
Real quick, I want to clear something up. You started by talking about how the United States accepted no refugees for the month of October, and
right.
You threw out a couple numbers there. Was that number of like 80,000 to 130,000? Was not a monthly figure, right?
That was an annual thing. The U.S. really got involved in the refugee resettlement business right after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of denominations created a program known variously as Week of Compassion, One Great Hour of Sharing. Different kinds of groups that were established, and together they were resettling lots of people all around the world, not just in the United States, but the numbers were high right after World War II. And we sort of settled into an average of over 100,000 a year. Recent administrations have pushed that way down. One recent year, we only did about 30,000.
So what is the difference between a refugee, which is, you know, we think of like somebody, you know, fleeing a war-torn area, coming out of a refugee camp. And what's the difference between that and the people who are showing up at the border, basically wanting to be caught by Border Patrol and claiming asylum?
It's really easy to answer that question. It's the border. So you have to be certified outside of the United States to be recognized as a refugee.
And certified by the U.S.
State Department, okay. Yes. If you are someone who still has a rational fear, or credible fear is the language they use, for persecution or death or upon return, once you're inside the United States, then the term is asylum.
All right. Let's take the break right here because I want to transition. And when we come back with Reverend Hoover, Joe, I want to hear what Reverend Hoover has to say about something you've been covering, right?
Yeah.
The Sanctuary City Initiative. We're all wondering how it's going to go. And Reverend Hoover will have some thoughts on that. And also, the opposition to the Sanctuary City, one of the items that have come up now that if you vote yes, you're opening the door to the cartels. So we'll hear what Reverend Hoover has to say about that. You want to make it, give us a brief tease, opening the door to cartels?
We created the cartels in the first place. Let's just start there.
Okay. Dylan, what time is it?
Well, I think it's a little bit afternoon, correct?
You bet.
Because we're listening to the Buckmaster Show, of
you
course.
You are, but...
But specifically on a Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Could be any day, I guess. But yep. Is it time to go have a sandwich and maybe a bite of a Danish crinkle?
It is. It's time for Mona's Danish Bakery, our favorite bakery in town. Mona's is home to the Danish Kringle, located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner and chief baker Steve and his team, what a great job they've done. You know, a few months ago, they started serving breakfast up there. It's been very successful. You can pretty much order whatever you want. They have a very extensive menu, and it carries over into the, you know, you could do breakfast now. I don't think that they would mind. It is lunchtime. They've got great sandwiches, too. So check it out, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, and they're on the web at monasdanishbakery.com. We'll have more. It's our Friday Focus interview in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio with the Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover. Dylan Smith is here and Joe Ferguson. I'm Bill Buckmaster, back after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Friday Focus interview today. Reverend Hoover is with us. He founded Humane Borders. His newest project is trying to use satellite-based technology, these rescue beacons to rescue immigrants stranded in the desert. How's that going, Reverend Hoover?
Well, that we went through the whole study of that thing. We used not one of them's ever been activated, but the irony of this thing is that those things have my name and contact information on them, and when someone is apprehended with them, they get an immediate non-processed return to Mexico because they get out of here. We don't want to talk to this guy. So, but what we've been doing now for about 1 year is hosting a website called guiamigrantes.com, and it helps people get the public service information that they need to successfully survive crossing Mexico. And if they choose, we actually encourage them not to, but if they choose to cross into the desert, it gives them practical information on how to survive.
Okay, Joe Ferguson is with us from the Arizona Daily Star, Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, on your website, TucsonSentinel.com, you're reporting about a decision from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that the yes on the sanctuary city movement are touting as, well, they're very happy with it. What is it? Can you give us the bottom line?
The appeals court came out with a ruling that the Trump administration cannot withhold grant funds from this, basically about cities, but you know, states, counties, towns, whatever, based on whether they are a sanctuary city or not. And there are a lot of fine-grained details, but that's the broad strokes. Thing is, this isn't a settled case. This sets up a circuit split where the Ninth Circuit has one stance on it. A couple of the other appeals court circuits in other portions of the country have said otherwise. So this is going to be basically up to the Supreme Court to settle whether this is something that can fly or not. It's kind of got a lot of repercussions beyond this individual determination about sanctuary cities and grant funds. It comes down to, there's a much earlier decision that was actually partly an Arizona case that said that, you know, the feds cannot enlist local law enforcement, and that was about whether local law enforcement agencies would have to basically enforce background checks for guns. And the Supreme Court said, well, no, you can't make them do that. So, you know, there are layers here that are beyond just this one issue of sanctuary cities.
We've never seen an administration withhold money for favors or some thing on a policy preference that they have. Oh, excuse me.
That'd be unprecedented.
I guess we're seeing that now. This, I want to comment there is that the business about law enforcement cooperation, that is so entrenched and so embedded in memoranda of understanding. Pima County even deputized some Border Patrol agents and all this kind of stuff over the last 15 years, I guess.
Just about every county in Arizona has done that. Yeah, Santa Cruz County and Cochise County, they've done hundreds.
You can't wipe all of that stuff away. We're basically just talking about people that are working the streets for the most part.
And, Joe, there's a lot of jockeying going on. People will say, well, the election's over, but there are people that have ballots right now that it maybe haven't filled them out that are going to turn them in, right, on election day.
Well, there's two things going on. I mean, there's always those people who get ballots and never vote. And so there's this hard push for those people to come out this year on this issue. And so there is just a lot of last-minute pushes coming from every direction.
Both sides saying stuff.
hyperbolic stuff, too.
On the one side, the folks that are saying vote no are saying, Reverend Hoover, that a yes vote would open the door to the cartel kind of violence that we saw in Culiacan a week or so ago.
The Culiacan one rubs me. It bothers me. To refresh everyone, the Mexican president let go the son of Chapo, Guzman. What's his last name?
Guzman.
Guzman. Let him go and everything because he figured they would have had a bloodbath, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of the supporters of Andres Manuel López Obrador, the president, AMLO is what they call him, are forgiving him for that, et cetera. It's sort of like I made the comment before we came on that it's sort of like all the good liberals forgiving Obama for all the deportations. You can do no wrong, you know, et cetera. And so...
but have you ever seen anything like that? A Mexican president saying, you know, release this guy because, you know,
that was a criminal organization hostage situation.
What does this open the door? What does this open the door to?
President Calderon pulled some troops out of part of Juarez for a brief period of time before. I've seen some things where they tried to calm the situation down, but releasing somebody, that's astounding to me.
Hmm. But to that rather hyperbolic point, is there, you know, cartels run places in Mexico, entire states, towns and cities.
Last year, we
were talking a little bit about this off air. Is there any chance that the cartels would think it would be good for business to try and violently take over places here in the United States in that sort of manner?
Absolutely not. The cartels prosper over the border enforcement that we currently employ in our courts and everything else because it drives up costs. They make a bigger percentage, market share, et cetera. So they like the status quo just like it is. I do want to point out that we're at the one-year anniversary of the huge 10,000-person caravan that came through Mexico City, and I was personally standing there with intelligence officers of the Mexican government, whom I can't name, and watching deals being made for small groups of migrants to go this way with the Zetas and these people to go to Querétaro and these people to go to Tijuana, et cetera. And the big payoff to the people that were involved in that, to the cartel, was not in the transportation of going to Tijuana. They just opened the corridor. So if you remember a year ago, all of a sudden thousands of people, quote, disappeared from Tijuana.
Yeah, where'd they go?
They went to Altar and Caborca, and that's where the cartels moved them and trafficked them, the people that wanted to cross illegally primarily through Altar, the people that wanted to apply for asylum primarily through Caborca. And they went through the Caborca shelter, which is just trash. And the ones that went through Altar were put up in, they have the traditional capacity to handle thousands of people a night. So they went back to the conventional means of crossing, which was easier because Department of Homeland Security had deployed so many people to California.
Before we go to Ingrid, who's on our live line, I want to ask you about the way the cartels are set up. If you think of like a business, there's the cartels, their umbrella, they'll have the drug part of the business, and now they have this human smuggling part of the business, getting these people presumably into the United States. Is that kind of the way it works? They have a division?
Yes. You don't use the exact same people to move drugs and people. It's a different technology, if you will.
Okay. Ingrid is with us. Ingrid, go ahead.
Yes, quickly. I heard you say earlier that a huge number of people were flown back to India and another place. That was over 1,000, wasn't it?
I'd like 280 to India and 180 to Cameroon, and they had never sent planes in those directions before.
Wow. Go ahead, Ingrid.
But they did it this time. Okay. How many people have been transported back to Mexico?
I can't tell you about the deportation rate in the U.S. right now. I'm sorry, I don't know the numbers. I know some of the bad consequences. We are laterally repatriating a lot of people. So if you apprehend them in California, then you take them to Texas. what that does is put them in the hands of other different competing cartels, and it's deadly sometimes.
And Ingrid, just to clarify, he's not talking about United States people, Americans sending these people back to Cameroon or to India. He's talking about the Mexican government flying these people back, and that's kind of something we've not heard of before.
Even sending people to Brazil, and they have treaty relationships that make that murky.
Yeah. Ingrid, does that take care of your...
The United States sends to Mexico, back to Mexico.
Yeah, the United States... they fly...
They do interior repatriation, they do border repatriation at ports of entry, and we're seeing a huge influx of increase in the number of people that are flown from various places in the United States to Monterrey, Mexico, which is interior. It's a little bit different, and releasing them still wearing their prison garb.
Okay, thank you, Ingrid. We have not talked about, and people that go to Rocky Point have been kind of very upset about this news.
I was just there.
Yeah. What was it, 42 people?
Oh.
The number of bodies recovered from a mass grave in Mexico near the border has risen to 42. What's that all about?
That's all transnational, illegal corporations doing their business. A lot of those are very old remains, by the way.
Hmm. You know, getting back to sanctuary cities, sanctuary cities have been talked about in this town for a long time, haven't they?
Yes.
I mean, what goes back to
a full decade or more
to Reverend Fife and the
sure.
Whole,
well, yeah, you well, do have to make a very fine point. Sanctuary movement, as we've known it, originated in faith-based groups, saying that you have to respond to a divine command to treat your neighbor as yourself, etc. This is different. Sanctuary here means this is sort of a safe place. The concept of sanctuary is even pre-biblical. It goes back to the law of the Wadi. I don't want to get too complicated.
Okay.
But it's an oasis. So if the bad guys are chasing me, I get to come into your oasis, and you have to give me permission, but I have to ask for it, and then the bad guys have to stay outside.
Weren't churches also seen as
Absolutely.
Sanctuaries yeah, through it's the ages?
Yes, and this has been tested in English tort law on numerous occasions and derivatives around the world. It's sanctuary, as we know it, has never been tested in U.S. federal court.
Can police make an arrest in a church?
Yes, sir.
But you said just now it's never been tested.
It's never been tested in the courts.
Interesting.
That's correct.
Hmm. And Joe Ferguson of the Star, the number one argument you would say that's being used against this is what?
The idea that you shouldn't be able to have federal agents come into some of these sensitive locations and arrest people, hospitals, churches,
schools.
That's an idea. Yeah. That's kind of an operational procedure. And recent commissioners of Customs and Border Protection and DHS have reasonably agreed to that.
Hmm. Dylan.
Sir.
Anything you would like to add?
I don't think you came out with a book recently, and I don't think we've mentioned that at all, and maybe you should tell people a little bit about that.
I wrote a book called Creating Humane Borders. It's a migration ethic. It's a social ethics analysis that basically says we ought to really take care of our neighbors to the south and love them like we very much do love ourselves.
Is that your general idea of how we should respond to this crisis? I mean, that's what I want to get into.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're running out of time for such a big topic. But how do we, if we, everybody says we have a crisis, what do we do to fix it?
If we integrate our economies and even social services, you'd have far fewer expenses in Pima County, for instance, if you if it was known that the person were here legally. They can get reimbursements for medical costs, and even at public education, it's not going to be at the same rate that the per capita per student. But there are mutual ways of living and being out here. There are more natural resources in South America than there are in North America. If we integrated our economy from here to Chile, we wouldn't even think about China and Brexit and any of this other stuff.
We have not talked about migrants that are being hidden in these semi-trailers. This is not only a problem in this country. We had over in England 40 or 50 people.
Cargo containers.
Cargo containers. Yes. I mean, is this the way that, is this kind of the an area of choice that the smugglers use or what?
All I can say is obviously is working.
Yeah.
But it's not a way to efficiently transport huge numbers of people. You got to remember, in 2001, for instance, there were more people successfully crossed the desert in and near to, around Tucson than live in Pima County year after year after year. So you're not going to get it with 30 and 20 and 40 here in a container. It has to be a huge flow.
How many years were you in the ministry?
33 and a third. Like an old record.
Well, why don't we end with your All Saints Day message? Do you have a message?
Well, how about Day of the Dead?
Day of the Dead tomorrow, right?
Yeah, let's talk to the dead because they have a lot to teach us. We don't really know what we think about them and how we appreciate folks until we say it or until we write it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to write it and let no one see it, burn it up at the end of the day. It's a great thing. I was in Mexico City as they were planting all of the golden flowers. What are they?
Marigolds, I believe. I love those. Those are so
all
beautiful.
Up and down Reforma. And I got to see one of the first day of parades. It's awesome. And it beats the hell out of Halloween.
There you go. Great movie if you want to look at a movie that's kind of related to all this. Coco.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked that movie. I'm not usually big on animated movies, but
you're
that
so
was
irrational and sweet and sensitive.
I know. It just really was good. Reverend Hoover, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir. All right, Joe Ferguson and Dylan Smith, we've got a lot to talk about on our roundtable portion of the program, which continues in the Buckmaster Show, Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Moa Mosgallery and Fine Framing. And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our Friday Focus Day. We did our Friday Focus interview today with Reverend Hoover. Dr. Hoover always has very interesting things to say about immigration and this whole field that he has been kind of a part of for 34 years. Now it's the roundtable portion of the Buckmaster Show. Joe Ferguson is here. Joe writes for the Arizona Daily Star. Joe, how are you?
I'm well.
Good. And Dylan Smith, we already kind of did a real nice introduction with Dylan, but Dylan from TucsonSentinel.com. I'm going to give you another quick shout out. Today is if you donate, not only today, right? For a couple of days?
For the next 2 months, from November 1st through the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve.
If I give $20 to the Tucson Sentinel during this period, what would happen to my money?
It would be matched through this amazing program called Newsmatch, which supports nonprofit news organizations all over the country, like TucsonSentinel.com. Mm-hmm. So, everybody who donates for over the next 2 months gets their contribution to our mission-driven local independent newsroom matched dollar for dollar by a group of national foundations, including the Knight Foundation, Democracy Fund, and a whole bunch of others. And but Bill, if you donate $20, of course, Newsmatch will give us $20. But then I'm going to ask you to increase that donation just a little bit.
Yeah, up it a little bit. There you go. And I didn't do the formal introduction from Dylan, by the way. He's very active in journalism matters, Arizona Press Club Vice President. Joe Ferguson, weren't you involved with the Press Club?
I still am.
He's a better board member than me because I missed the last meeting.
But he is a board member?
Yeah, I am. I'm the contest chair at the moment.
Okay, and Dylan also has become, really, he's done some international travel about this whole local independent online news publishers that the Tucson Sentinel's part of that, kind of that whole umbrella. Dylan's been involved with that. He's the immediate past chair. Actually, last year did a trip to Norway to talk to people up in Norway about online news publishing.
We're trying to basically rebuild the news business from the ground up, from local up, and make sure that we actually have the sort of, you know, responsible, real hard-hitting journalism for years and years to come. That's not a knock on folks like Joe, who are still over at the Star and at many other publications, working hard and kicking ass. It's the corporations that they work for that are very slowly and methodically, essentially, just sucking the lifeblood out of journalism.
Dismantling journalism.
It's a terrible thing, and it's going to get even worse. Two of the largest newspaper chains in the country, Gatehouse and Gannett. Gannett's a half owner of the Star. They are the owner of the Republic. They're about to merge and basically be sucked into Gatehouse, which is a company that just is trying to wring out every last penny right now.
Gee, that merger should have been formalized yesterday on Halloween.
Would have been more appropriate, right?
Indeed.
It's very ghoulish. Anyway, Joe is out working hard today. He went over to a news conference today that was called by the independent candidate for mayor. And how did that go?
There weren't many there
Ed
today.
Ackerley,
it's a noontime press conference is not exactly a time to get a crowd, but
Ed's really pushing for those people who have ballots sitting at home on their kitchen counter. It's hoping to get turnout to really kind of help.
And there are a lot of those people that have those ballots.
I mean, you know, an off-year city election, it doesn't generally get past 40%. So, I mean, more than half of the people who will get a ballot just simply won't return it.
To show you how many, we're talking about 261,000 ballots are sent out and just a fraction are returned.
Yeah. And that's the way it's been for years. And the thought was is that mail-in ballots were going to help with turnout, but you know, people just can't get interested in it, aren't going to change their mind just because it comes to their mailbox.
Well, so, a lot of people involved in this election, even if they're not directly involved with the supporting or opposing the initiative, are hoping that Prop 205, the sanctuary cities measure, will drive a little bit more last minute turnout in their favor. So they're trying to talk about that more than other stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm really surprised at seeing some of the Republican turnout in this election. I mean, looking at the early numbers, and Republicans generally return their ballots quicker than Democrats do historically in terms of Tucson politics, but you have a fairly strong turnout from Republicans this year, despite the fact they don't have a torchbearer in the mayor's race. So I think that you're seeing a lot of Republicans that are involved in this race despite that.
Mm-hmm. Does that potentially boost Ackerley's fortunes?
Could. I mean, you know,
he's not a Republican, but he's been working really hard to get Republican support.
Yeah, but I mean, you see it all the time with undervotes.
You think
people
that
people don't, you know, they vote for 205 and they send it back, never check another box. So we'll see.
I was just going to ask you if that would help these other candidates running in the wards, the Republican candidates.
It's hard to say.
Maybe not. Maybe, as you just said, they might just vote on the 205 measure. For or against, and then just send the ballot back.
Or they might vote for all Republicans and not, you know, make a judgment in the mayor's race. You know, they still have a pretty large Democratic lead over them in terms of registration, so they have to overcome that. And so it'll help, but, you know, the devil's in the details.
Yeah. Basically, every Republican in Tucson could cast a ballot, and if only half of Democrats do.
51%. But yeah. Close to that.
You wrote about this, and we talked about it on the air yesterday, something very much on, no, I think it was Wednesday we talked about it. Oh, I lose track of time.
You have so much going on this show.
I had a lot.
And there's so much going on.
I had a lot going on this week. Things like Fletcher McCusker revealing that 317 California companies just this week have reached out to Arizona economic developers and said, we'd like some more information about your state and doing business and moving our company.
They like
here.
Electricity.
Yeah, you
they
have
like,
electricity?
They like electricity. But anyway,
and we got that.
I talked to
Thanks,
for the moment.
I talked a little bit with Michael Guyman of the chamber about this, the item that you wrote about in the mayor and council salary increases up for a vote. And by charter, this has to come up every 2 years. But it's been 20 years since this was passed, an increase for the council.
Right. And I think Michael had some good points on that. And I've talked to others that, you know, really at the end of the day say that this isn't going to cost anything for taxpayers. It's just fractions of cents that we're talking about. And at the end of the day, the council members are the lowest people paid in the entire city organization.
24,000.
You have to dig really deep to find full-time employees that are making less than $24,000 a year.
Nominally, being a council member is a part-time job. It's written that way, but I don't know anybody who has been in one of those posts over the past two decades that has actually only worked 20 hours a week.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I'm not casting ill on any of them, but, you know, there are ones that are doing 50-hour weeks, too. I mean, there are people that are punching that clock that are calling my phone at 10 o'clock at night and at 7 a.m. So, I mean, they're working.
In addition to whatever gig they are almost certainly working because
if they're not retired, they're working.
When was the last person on the council who that was their only job? I can't think of anybody for like 30 years.
I'm going back.
Maybe there's somebody in there, but and
did Fred work?
I'm not sure. That's who came to mind. That's who Fred Ronstadt. Yeah. I was thinking.
Fred, if you're listening, call in.
Yeah.
And let us know. Yeah. It really, you know, it comes down to you get what you pay for. And if you have complaints about the people who have been running and been elected over the past however many years, well,
but there's
isn't the position, isn't the what we advertise the job for not attracting people who can't otherwise afford to do it? And you hear that from a lot of folks who would be like, well, I could run. I think I would be good at that. I just can't afford to take that job.
But the problem with is you get what you pay for. That's what people see, is that they say, well, we've got busted streets. We've got black police reports. You know, we get response. And so we can't afford the people that we've got. I'm not going to pay for a $40,000 a year if they can't do these things simply right. And that's a great argument. But at the end of the day, you know, I've estimated it would cost over $20 million to hire enough cops to what some people were talking about on the campaign trail. It would cost $700 million to fix the roads to the way people want to do that. And you could get some really good people, but they have to come with, you know, tens of millions of dollars of ideas.
There is that. Boosting the wages of a mayor and council to what's been proposed in this measure would maybe cost about what it would take to pave, what, two or three blocks of a residential street?
Not even that.
It's, you know, a fairly small amount in the grand scheme of what's going on at the council.
I mean, why not pay these people a decent wage?
And it's not an exorbitant amount. The proposal is to pay them the median income for Tucson, just to, you know, to be the, basically get paid like everybody else. And when you put it like that,
here's a better way.
Go ahead.
Tell me a better way to put it.
Why don't we hire them so they only have one master instead of two?
So they're not working for Chuck Huckleberry like so many of them have done over the years? They're basically, you know, an employee of the county administrator while they're trying to run the city?
Something like that. I mean,
or the U of A, or whomever?
Or TUSD, or environmental groups. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
It does.
You know, if you want them dedicated to one thing, you have to give them a salary to do that.
Mm. Joe, what are you planning to do this weekend for the paper?
Well, I'm working on a couple of election stories. We were getting ready for election night. I mean, 8 o'clock, we've got a lot of things to tell you about. So we are putting resources where they need to be and making sure that we're ready for 8 o'clock and to talk about.
You got the pizza order ready?
You know, I don't get to choose the pizza. I wish I did, because I could really help out some local businesses that I favorite. So
you think by about 8 o'clock up on your website, there'll be something?
Yeah, we're going to have stuff all night, too. We're not going to bed early. We're going to stay up late to make sure we get all the updates. Tucson.com will be active for hours and hours, including at 7 o'clock, a Facebook Live chat with some of our political columnists and reporters.
Well, that sounds good. Dylan, anything you'd like to plug?
Well, you know, pretty much the same. We're getting ready for election night. I don't know that we're going to have to go deep into the night to be able to call some of these races.
Yeah, I don't.
Others may take a while. It really, at this point, it's all down to how these, you know, how people turn in their votes in the last few days. I pretty much every election, I wait until the sun goes down on election day to go turn in my ballot. I want to make sure that I'm, you know, got all the possible information I might need.
All righty, friends. Weekend Watch is coming up next. Dylan Smith. Thanks, Dylan.
Indeed. Thank you.
And Joe, thank you very much. Always
thank
a pleasure. Guess who's going to do Weekend Watch? We've got Matt is over on the cruise, right?
All right.
Over in the Mediterranean, having a great time on his Bon Voyage cruise. Dan Gibson, our backup guy, is on an airplane to Philadelphia. So guess who we're calling upon? Jim Nitzel.
That was my guess.
There it is. Nitzel's going to be, if you're listening, Jim, call now. All right. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
All right, Weekend Watch presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. How about a weekend getaway? 3-hour road trip over to Silver City, and you will not regret it. Lots to do. And it's a beautiful area this time of year, especially. Check out southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find all sorts of ideas about recreation and some ideas about great places to stay in a very pretty area of the Land of Enchantment, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Weekend Watch now with Jim Nintzel, executive editor of the Tucson Weekly. Jim, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bill. It's an exciting weekend again in Tucson, Arizona.
I tell you, this is big. 30th annual All Souls procession. That one, we're talking about 150,000 people Sunday. Whoa.
A lot of people come downtown to this big event. You know, it started, as you said, 30 years ago. It's really, you know, it's a fun community event, but it's also an important one where people have a chance, I think, who are grieving, to have an expression of that grief, which is really how the whole thing started out. And sure, it's a party in many ways, but it's also an opportunity for people to think about their lost loved ones. And there's a ritual where you can write down a thought or put in a picture into this very large urn as it parades through the streets, and then they set it ablaze at the end. And I think that's really a cathartic experience.
Very nice. 4 to 10 Sunday afternoon. Congress Street, kind of where it all's happening, right, Jim?
No, actually, it's Congress Street and Avenida del Convento. So it's on the west side of the river now.
Okay.
So it's kind of by the Mercado, San Augustine.
Big event, Tucson Museum of Art, their annual Crush Party 2019.
Big fundraiser for the museum. They're going to be, you know, they're working on that patio space, so they're actually closing the streets around the museum right now for this party. And you get to, of course, go in the gallery and see all the shows. But there's also restaurants and breweries and, you know, the distilleries and all these folks who are going to be handing out samples of their wares. as well. And this one's a little expensive, $45 for members, $60 for folks who are not members of the museum. But it's a great opportunity to both support the museum and get some great samples of food from around our community.
And that one's tonight. Taste of the Desert Festival, our friends at UA Cooperative Extension, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This is going to be a good one, isn't it?
If you don't want to spend the money on that, you get out for free, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on 2205 South 4th Avenue. It tastes all kinds of food from different vendors around town.
Thank you, sir. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Have a great weekend.